You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
For something a little bit different, let's start with a little word association game. When I say social media, what comes to mind? Radio's a bit one-sided, so I can't know for sure what you thought of, but if I had to guess, I'd say what came to mind was Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Hypothetically, we've all thought of the same handful of companies because those are the companies we interface with on a daily basis. They're the ones we use to mediate our communication and interact with one another because they're the ones that everyone uses. The fancy term for this sort of structure is an oligopoly, which Wikipedia defines as being a market form wherein a market or industry is dominated by a small group of large sellers. And the companies that make up this oligopoly are pretty big. Facebook, for example, boasted $70 billion in revenue for 2019. There's a significant degree of consolidation within this as well, like Facebook's ownership of Instagram and Google's of YouTube. And with such a significant share of the market between these companies comes significant power and influence. Social media has been at the forefront of many political scandals in recent years, from Donald Trump's Twitter ban, to the Cambridge Analytica scandal, to the proliferation of COVID-19 conspiracy theories. Even short of these big single incidents, concern has also been raised over growing political polarization in the age of social media, as well as the platforming of alt-right content. Some may remember a story from a few years back about how the YouTube autoplay function can work as a rabbit hole to far-right content, as the algorithm works to keep the user glued to their screen for as long as possible. Some think that this is impetus for change. Dr. Sander Paul Swasenberg, a lecturer in the Department of Information Science at the University of Otago, is one such person. He recently wrote a piece in Newsroom arguing that the problem lies in the structures and incentives inherent to private companies and argues instead for a shift towards public control of social media platforms. I reached out to him to talk about the issues around social media and the public sphere as they exist in the status quo and whether such a transition is actually feasible. I started by asking him how social media companies' status as an oligopoly shapes the way these companies are structured and the way we interact with them.
Well, first of all, I think they all have a similar governance structure. If you look at the largest two, Facebook and Google, they both are controlled really by their owners or the founders. So Mark Zuckerberg, and in the case of Google, it's Sergey and Sergey Brin and Larry Page. They have the absolute voting powers for all decisions, basically, that affects the corporate companies. So what they have at heart is really the best interest of the company. And what the problem really is that the best interest of the company is not aligned with the best interest of the public. So they have been using all sorts of algorithms to try and sell advertising to all of us, to all of the users, really, and see the users also as products. So basically, as we have seen in the documentary The Social Dilemma, users are seen as products, really. So behavioral change, that's what's promised by those companies to the advertisers on social media. And that's how those companies have had a tremendous impact on the public. And what's more, it's not just a traditional advertising company, as you know, but there's a lot of sophisticated algorithms that go into it so that there's a micro-targeted campaigns that can be launched so that you use a lot of data to see how people respond to different sorts of advertising. And you can manipulate that quite easily so that you will only select those advertising or those messages for just the right people. So that has an unprecedented impact on our behavior and our thinking. We've seen that with, you know, the Brexit campaign in the UK and the Trump campaign in the US. Loads of different examples politically, but also commercially. Our thinking is more and more shaped according to social media advertising.
You alluded to us and our data being the product that's being sold by these companies. it's pretty common knowledge that these companies do track our data, but I feel like the scale of just how much data is being tracked kind of misses us a little bit. Could you contextualize just how much data and how much information about us is being tracked on a regular basis by these companies?
So I think what's important to remember is that not only do our visits to those platforms and those apps get recorded and collected and put in databases for these companies to analyze, but even when we go to all sorts of other places on the web that make use of cookies or little pieces of content on those pages, for example, there's a lot of blogs around that have a like button connected to Facebook. And what that does is that it allows Facebook to know exactly where you are on that page. So it kind of keeps track on your behavior. Now, that's not just blogs, but also web shops and all of those kind of things. And I think a lot of people may have realized that they are being tracked when they see, you know, the advertising appear on Facebook or other social media that seem to be informed by their visits to other pages, right? So it's not just who we talk to and how often and what we do, what we think, and what we post online, but also what pages we visit, what products we buy, or what products we are interested in, and so on. So if you think about everything that we put in or everything that where we leave traces online, it's just a mind-boggling amount of information that is being gathered and that is being put in the algorithm and put in the databases that they contain. And I think that's really a problem.
What particular incentives do private companies operate on that publicly owned ones don't?
So ultimately, there are a number of ways in which these companies may listen to the public, and that is through just sheer regulation. The problem of that is that there isn't nearly enough regulation for those giant companies. So really, what it boils down, what the dominant incentives there are, maximizing shareholders' wealth and personal wealth, really, of the founders as well. That, to me, seems like a prime motivation for most of these companies. Now, I believe that Mark Zuckerberg is not just after his own wealth, but he's after dominance of Facebook. He'd like to have Facebook be dominant for the next few decades. And I think he does a lot of things in order to do that. And that, I think, is often conflicting with the interest of the public.
And it is often in the political sphere that we see this profit motive sort of running counter to the public good. So, for example, while Trump's Twitter ban was celebrated by some, should we be concerned about the censorship capabilities of companies like Twitter? Could there be a scenario where these same powers are wielded against political activists and groups with much less power than the President of the United States?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have no clear understanding of what drives those censorship decisions. There are policies within Facebook and within Google and other social media companies that may drive that, but there's no insurance that this will be defending the public. I mean, they have created those policies not out of regulations. Perhaps there's a minor input from regulations, but they've had to invent that themselves. And I don't think a for-profit company should have to make those kind of decisions. We, as a society or our governments, will have to think through those sorts of things. When censorship is okay, and when what can be said and what cannot be said, or if there's a complete freedom. I mean, all of these decisions shouldn't lie within for-profit companies, but really should be fed from basically the public. And I think when those private companies would make those decisions with kind of collective input, that would really alleviate that situation.
And I guess also there's no democratic accountability or transparency around these decisions, right? Like, you don't get to vote for Mark Zuckerberg to be in charge of Facebook.
Yeah, there's a complete lack of input. You know, it's very ironic given that we put in a lot of our lives on social media, but what our long-term interests are not served and are not listened to. So I think that's a real problem. We should have some say in how these companies are run, and I think there are all sorts of ways that we can have it. You know, you might think that publicly traded companies will have at least a collection of shareholders that have some power. And in fact, if you look at the shareholders of Facebook and Google, all of them, both of these companies have had shareholders that are putting in really good shareholders resolutions to try and change and distribute power and try and voice the public's concerns. But these resolutions are rejected just because the Mark Zuckerberg and Larry Page and Sergey Brin, they have rejected those, and they have the absolute voting powers. So they are not going to distribute those voting powers. So basically, they act as with absolute power. So they're a bit like it's kind of a dictatorial sort of setting, which is completely, I think, really problematic. Having discussed all of the problems with privacy, and you know, also with addiction and manipulation, and also those echo chambers that I wrote about in the article.
You've previously compared social media to basic infrastructure, things like utilities, electricity, transport. Does this make solutions like breaking up these companies less viable in dealing with all the problems that we've talked about?
So my analogy really with the railways and the roads is that social media now really acts like a basic infrastructure that we all, or many of us, rely on. I mean, if you're in a business and you want to advertise, you want to reach out to people, you no longer go to the mainly to the traditional broadcasters, but you go to Facebook as well, or Google. So likewise, with our roads and railways, there's a tremendous reliance, and I don't think it makes a lot of sense in having lots of different companies there, lots of different companies or organizations looking after our railways or our roads. Just like I don't think it will make a lot of sense for us to cut up social media into lots of different small organizations. What I do think is that if this is a basic infrastructure, we'll need to have a collective input into that organization or whatever governs that basic infrastructure.
Is it actually feasible to convert these companies to public ownership? You know, like, are they too enmeshed in our lives as they currently are for this to be possible? Or is their status as these giant transnational companies and the fact that they're US-based, is it actually feasible, is it possible for them to be converted?
It's a great question, and I think it is tremendously difficult. But what we've seen, interestingly, around the world, there are all sorts of areas where Google and Facebook have budged, where they have changed how they operate because the governments demand them to do so, or else they won't get access, or they'll be blocked in those countries. So I think it is entirely possible for the New Zealand government to say, if you want to operate in New Zealand and have a dominant social and behavioral footprint in our society, you ought to listen to it. Ideally, change your power structure, share your voting rights with the other shareholders that have the public's interest at heart. Or at the very least, set up a subsidiary that governs the New Zealand Facebook or Google services that is organized so that, you know, the public's voice is heard. I think it's completely feasible, and it doesn't need to be public ownership, you know, with individuals necessarily owning all of the shares. but at least if there is some structure in place so that the public's voice is heard and listened to and acted on, I think that is a massive step forward.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.